Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
All right, welcome back to another installment of the Wide Right Podcast. I'm Manny Navarro, Miami Hurricanes beat writer for The Athletic. Today, joined by the former host of the Atlantic and Coastal Podcast for The Athletic. That would be Virginia Tech beat writer Andy Bitter. Andy, you know, it had a good run. Atlantic and Coastal had a good run. Now it's over. And I'm thinking you and I got to partner and do some ACC stuff. What do you think?
Did it have a good run? It had a run that lasted through a pandemic season, which was weird. And then last year, which was just 1 year. So I don't know if that's a good run. It had a run. We can fully admit that. I won't go anything beyond that.
Listen, Atlantic and Coastal, you were going to have to get rid of the name anyway, right? After this season, you were going to have to come up with something else.
I thought it became cooler now that it would have been the defunct division model. And actually, that first year we did it, they didn't have the divisions because it was the COVID year.
Right.
So they got rid of the divisions. I feel like if I would have been doing it in the future, it would have been like a retro thing. Like, oh man, this guy's old school ACC.
That's
this
true.
Is back when they had divisions. So yeah, we lost that aspect of it. But oh well, missed opportunity.
It. I don't know. Do we call it Grant of Rights now? Do we call this segment the Grant of Rights that's holding the ACC together? That's too long of a name. We got to come up with something better.
Yeah, there's not the tough part with the ACC is there's not something that really like binds it.
Right.
Like it's such a wide ranging conference. It's like, what does Boston College and Florida State have in common? Like other than uniform colors, I guess for those two, but it's like North and South. It's not like you can do like a Sweet Tea conference or something like it just doesn't work like that. So
sponsored by Duke's Mayo. That's
what this is part of the problem when we were naming Atlantic and Coastal is trying to come up with something like that. So we'll brainstorm it.
Atlantic and Coastal might be what we have to call it going forward. Like you said, the retro idea, maybe that'll just remind people of the glory days. How bummed are you that they're getting rid of the divisions? Because you were the guy who originally came up with the idea that they're now adopting, which is the 3-5-5. You were the mastermind behind it. Is there any sadness at all that the Coastal is going away?
No sadness. None at all. No, I've been on this train for 9 years. As you mentioned, I did write about this 9 years ago, but they find me an article before that published this 3-5-5 model. I'm just putting that out there. I haven't seen one. You know, I'll change my tune if somebody shows me one predating June of 2013. But for now, I'm going to just stake claim to having come up with this idea. I never liked the divisions that much anyway. I thought it was just an artificial way to say that you're in a competition when you're not. And, you know, sometimes most of the time it felt like one of the divisions was inferior to the other one. And you get to the championship game and it's sort of this anticlimactic moment to the season where it's like, OK, Clemson or Florida State are going to beat the hell out of who from the Coastal? And it wasn't every year, but a lot of years you're sitting there going, man, Clemson's number 2 in the country and Florida State's number 5 in the country. Why aren't these guys playing at the end of the year to decide something? Why don't you put your best foot forward at that point, ACC, and you know, you want people to watch these championship games. I think that's something that people would really watch. So I'm all for the divisionless thing. I don't care about these athletic directors. Like, well, how do I sell tickets if we're in 10th place in the ACC? I'm like, well, finish better than 10th place in the ACC. It won't be a problem. So like these people are like, well, we're in third place in the Coastal going into November. It's like, that's not very good sometimes. That's a pretty far out of first place. World's smallest violin for these people that have to change up their marketing strategy a little bit. But I think this is good because I think it gets the rivalries kept that need to be kept mostly. For some reason, Virginia Tech's not playing Miami every year. That doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. But you keep most of the rivalries that matter, and you get to get through the rest of the conference in a timely manner, which is, that was the big thing with this league is, if you're Virginia Tech, it doesn't even feel like you're in the same league as Florida State.
No.
Or if you're Miami, it doesn't even feel like you're in the same league as Clemson because you just don't play them that often.
Wake Forest.
Once every 7 years is ridiculous under that old model. So now this time you're going to see them twice every 4 years. I like that. I like that setup.
Yeah. Miami, Wake Forest. That's I think the last time they played that game, Al Golden was still coach at Miami, and that was a long time ago.
A couple coaches ago now.
Yeah. We're going to talk a little bit about the Miami Virginia Tech rivalry down the road, because I wanted to ask you about that. But I wanted to start, and part of the reason I'm bringing you on my podcast, obviously, is because you were in Charlotte. I was with my mother and my family out in the mountains in Georgia. My mom's 67th birthday. My mom, she's got diabetes. She's going to need a transplant here probably in the next 5 to 10 years. And so every birthday now is special. And I just, we planned this so far ahead of ACC Media Days. I was like, you know what? I'll see Mario. I'll see Tyler Van Dyke. I'll see all these guys. I don't need to be there. And Andy Bitter will be there. And so will Matt Fortuna and the rest of our ACC team. And you guys did fine. You didn't need me.
Well, that was the whole ACC team. We're a shrinking group right now. That was the extent. I remember
can't
one of
count
my first
Grace
years-
anymore.
Well, she wasn't there. She was off doing recruiting stuff. Yeah. So I remember the first year we talked to the commissioner Swaffer, where there was like five or six of us in the room. And now it's dwindling. It was actually a good conversation Fortuna and I had with Jim Phillips in the athletics breakout session there. So and in that meeting, I told him, hey, now this guy had your scheduling model 9 years ago. Just note that. Know that. So I've gone all the way to the top and told him who came up with that idea. But yeah, I mean, you don't miss anything at the ACC kickoff, right? I mean, it's everybody's in a great mood. Everybody's, nobody's lost a game at that point. I'm feeling really confident about this team. This is the best conditioning we've ever been in. We're really physical. Yeah, everybody says the exact same stuff at those things. It's nice to get together and sort of kick off the football season in a somewhat lighthearted way. But as far as hard news, you're not really missing anything at that event.
No, not at all. And I guess, the big conversations really were about the new coaches, right? I mean, you've got one. I've got one here in Miami. We had a few others in the conference. Mario's a big deal, I think, for the ACC, and especially the way Miami is spending money now, with everything going on with realignment. We're going to dive into that in a second. But it feels like Miami and Virginia Tech in particular, two programs that were sort of the ACC's big pickups, right, if you will, back in 2004, they need to win. They need to be good. I don't know where Virginia Tech is headed under Brent Pry, but I got a good feeling about Miami right now. And I know I've said that, every year you and I have worked together. This might be the team. I just think because of the money that they've spent on coaching, the money they spent on facilities, what they're doing in name, image, and likeness to get really good players here, it feels like Miami's on the cusp. They were picked to win the division this year, which is meaningless. They've won it once in the entire time that they've been a part of the Coastal. But I don't know. Like, you always shoot Miami down when you and I talk. You're like, yeah, I'm never. Are you buying Mario? Is my question as a voter in the ACC preseason poll? Were you buying Miami, or who did you pick to win the division?
I picked Pitt.
You picked Pitt. It's not a bad pick. I picked them to finish second.
Now, a couple of years ago, when Miami played in that Independence Bowl against Louisiana Tech, where they shut out in that game,
14-0.
Okay. As I'm watching that game, I tweeted. I said, "Dear Andy Bitter VT." No matter what happens this offseason, do not pick Miami to win the Coastal Division title. Signed, Andy Bitter VT. And then I said, somebody tweet this at me in July as a reminder not to pick Miami. And every July since then, somebody reminds me of that before the ACC kickoff. That tweet has had legs for a couple of years now, reminding that. I feel like when we do this thing, we always look at the teams on paper, and Miami is always a very sexy team on paper because it recruits better than anybody in the conference. I mean, just, you know, star-wise, you look at the roster, you go, man, look at this, all the blue chips on this roster. And it's been like that forever. Mm-hmm. I mean, as long as you can remember with Miami, they've always had the most talented roster, and they've never been able to really do anything with it outside of that one season they won the Coastal Division. So, again, here we are listening to all the great things that Mario Cristobal is doing. The U is back. He's got that swagger back. I remember when Manny Diaz was riding in boats in the yes. canals and stuff like that. And everybody's like, oh, the U's got the swagger, turnover chain. Here we go. And a couple of years later, they're, you know, 500 team. He's getting fired. I come in cautiously with this whole Miami Cristobal thing. I'm going to have to see it. And even if I do think that they're, you know, they've got big things up on the horizon, I'm a little skeptical that's going to happen this year with this year's team. I think they're recruiting great. That all looks fine. Those players aren't here yet. They're playing with the roster basically they had last year, plus the additions, obviously, in the offseason. And I just don't know if that's a better roster than Pitt right now, or a better team than Pitt. Now, Pitt has its own issues. Don't get me wrong. You know, losing Heisman Trophy candidates in Kenny Pickett at quarterback, losing the offensive coordinator, Jordan Addison leaves. But that's a pretty deep team still. And I think they had like 8 guys that were on the all ACC teams last year. So, you know, between a team that won it last year that has a lot returning, even if it's not the headliner players, and a team that annually disappoints in this thing, we always fall for the trap. We always pick Miami. I went with Pitt this year. So we'll see if that's a good decision or not. But Miami's in the phase now where I'm going to have to see it first. And I put Virginia Tech in that same category. I'm not falling for the Virginia Tech thing until I see it first. It's got to happen. I'm not going to talk myself into the Hokies. I want to see some progress on the field before I turn around and actually pick these teams to accomplish something in the preseason.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Let's talk about Pitt a little bit, because the reason I didn't pick them wasn't just because they lost their quarterback, Kenny Pickett. Obviously, Jordan Addison was a huge loss. Biletnikoff Award winner, gone to USC. They lost their offensive coordinator, Mark Whipple, who was at Miami many, many years ago with Randy Shannon. He went to Nebraska. I just feel like that's a big thing to lose. Coordinator, top receiver, quarterback. In today's game, that's going to knock you back. Now, I will say they, without question, are on paper, I think, just as talented at Miami, minus the quarterback. Like Kadon Slovis coming over from USC, bringing him in. He's supposed to be pretty good quarterback. He started for 3 years in college, or 2.5, because I guess he kind of lost his starting job last year at USC. But the point is, he's an experienced guy. I know they picked up one of the top receivers out of the G5 level. I think a freshman out of Western Michigan who was very, very good. I remember looking, doing the whole sort of roster breakdown. They got their whole offensive line back. They got, you know, the defensive line, a whole bunch of those older guys are back as well. So I agree with you. I think Pitt is, you know, they could very well come down here and beat Miami the last game of the season and win the division. But I think there's a clear separation after Miami and Pitt. And the reason I say that is, as good as Mac Brown has done recruiting, like, North Carolina last year was really disappointing, right? Like, I mean, that was their year to be really, really good. I just think there's a big gap. Do you agree? Do you think there's a big gap after Miami and Pitt in the division?
I think there's a gap. I think it's, I put those three first. I went Pitt, Miami, North Carolina. And then I think there's an even bigger gap after North Carolina. I don't really know what to make of North Carolina. North Carolina is one of those teams where the recruiting hasn't seemed to match what's been on the field. And you wonder, you know, what is Mac Brown doing there? You had Sam Howell last year, wasn't able to get over the hump with that team. The team the previous year seemed actually much, much better with all those NFL guys. They had those receivers and those running backs, especially, who I think they really missed last year. But, you know, eventually maybe this talent all comes around at the same time for North Carolina. I mean, they lose Howell. They have a pretty talented quarterback crew behind him coming in. They bring in Gene Chizik again, who actually did very big things with that defense during his first stint there. I remember Gene from my time covering Auburn when I was down there, and he won a national championship with Auburn. Hard to believe that 10 years after the fact. But, you know, he is a very organized, very detailed defensive coordinator. And I think having that can make a pretty big defense for a group that, you know, had some talent, but maybe undisciplined, maybe made mistakes that a better coach wouldn't be having them make. So I think there's a chance there for North Carolina to do something this year, but I agree with you. I think it's Pitt, Miami as those top two contenders in the division. Then I put North Carolina third, and then I go to the next teams after that.
Yeah, I look, Virginia, obviously the coaching change, bringing over Tony Elliott to come be the head coach, a former Clemson OC. Smart hire. I think he's going to do a good job there. I mean, all of these Clemson guys, him and Venables, I think them they're going to have success. There's no doubt in my mind. Venables is obviously in a much better situation at Oklahoma, where he's going to get recruits no matter what. But I think, you know, Elliott's going to be successful at Virginia. You wrote the season preview on them. They lost their entire starting offensive line, if I'm not mistaken. But they've got one of the best quarterbacks in the conference and Brennan Armstrong. They've got some playmakers at receiver. I think they're going to score a whole bunch of points, but I don't know the defense is going to get that much better. And then your team, Virginia Tech, when you cover, you know, Brent Pye, I feel like he's, I mean, they had a lot of kids transfer out, didn't they, at the end of the season? I mean, that's
by necessity. Team. They had to. They were over the scholarship limit. They needed guys to leave to get to that point. And I think the guys that did leave, it wasn't, you know, there was sort of a move to the NFL by a bunch of guys who were like, okay, this is sort of turning the page on the Fuente era. And a lot of guys who normally would have been seniors, but, you know, had another year because of the COVID year, but are just like, all right, I think I'm done at this point. But in the off season, like once you got past that initial wave, once Pry was in, they lost 7 or 8 guys in the portal, but they needed to. I mean, they had 10 running backs on the roster when Pry took over, and they lost 4 of them to the portal. And I don't think it was any big negative for the program. They needed to do that. They needed to get it down to a manageable number. So I think the interesting thing with Virginia Tech is I don't really see a ton of top line talent. I don't see any obvious.
And they've been very good. They've been very good at that position for a few years.
Well, now. I mean, you look at last year, they had 4 or 5 guys drafted, I think. I can't remember how many actually got picked. I think it was 4. That's a decent number. I mean, they were all later on in the draft. I think the earliest was 4th or 5th round, something.
Miami's like had 3.
I know Barno. Amari Barno went pretty early, 2nd or 3rd round, I think.
Oh, you're talking about defensive line too?
Yeah, I'm talking about whole team. Whole team right now for Virginia Tech. So, you know, you have a number of guys get drafted like that. And I look at this year's roster. I don't know if anybody gets drafted off this team.
Well, Miami only had 1 last year, John Ford, 7th round. That kept the streak alive for them.
Yeah, I mean, that's tough. It's tough when you don't have a lot of those top line players to maybe cover up some of the deficiencies on the team. And on top of that, I don't think they're very deep. And they're not very deep at a certain, you know, some spots that could really hurt you. They get an injury in their offensive line, they're dipping into true freshmen, perhaps, on the second team. You know, that would scare me if I'm a Virginia Tech fan. So I look at this team and I wonder what a coaching staff that's maybe a little more competent can accomplish with what this roster is. But at the same time, they lost some top end talent from last year's team. And I don't know they necessarily have that to replace it. So I think that'll be interesting to watch with how Pry does in his first year, because I think they'll make improvements on the defensive side. I don't really know what to expect offensively because there's so many new pieces. And then Virginia, yeah, Tony Elliott has got his work cut out for him. I mean, that receiving core is outstanding. Mm-hmm. Let me say that up front. Brennan Armstrong's really, really good, that receiving core. I think they could be a very entertaining team. I think they can put up some points. The thing that concerns me so much is the offensive line. It's not that they just lose their entire starting offensive line. They lost like their sixth guy too. He also transferred.
That's crazy.
And some of the guys they had coming in, it didn't work out his plan. So, you know, Armstrong is going to be back there. Is he going to make it through a season? If they can't block for him, are they going to be able to? They've been talking about trying to get a traditional running game for the longest time, and they just have not been able to do it the last 3 or 4 years. Bronco Mendenhall, when he was there, they just couldn't do it. They couldn't run the ball. It might have even been the entire time he was there. They couldn't do it. They relied so much on their quarterback. So that's a lot to put on Brennan Armstrong's shoulders. And then defensively, they couldn't stop anybody last year. I think they could be better just by bringing in somebody who has a little bit more focus on fundamentals, and, you know, schematically they can do some stuff. And Tony Elliott's talked about, you know, trying to play complementary football where the offense isn't going down and scoring in 40 seconds. Then your defense is just gassed and gives up the touchdown the other way. I mean, you look at the BYU game last year where they gave up 60 some points in that game. You're like, well, you got to give your defense some help. If you're offensively, you can't just go up and down the field like that. So, those two teams have a lot of question marks for first-year coaches this year. I think it could be some rough going, certainly if they get some injuries in the wrong spots.
Who do you think is better between the two of them right now? Give me your get all the Virginia Tech or Virginia fans mad at you. Which one's going to be the better team?
I mean, I picked Virginia Tech fourth and Virginia fifth.
Okay.
In the division. That game this year is in Blacksburg. Virginia has not won in Blacksburg since 1998.
Good reason to pick the Hokies.
I mean, even as down as Virginia Tech has been in the last couple of years, the Hokies have lost once to them in the last 20 years. I mean,
yeah,
these are just facts of these two programs, and it's tough to deny them. It's just, there's something about the Virginia Tech and this rivalry that, you know, UVA gets down there inside the 15-yard line. They're poised to score. They have all these weapons at the end of the game last year, and they turn around. They throw a lateral out wide to the offensive tackle. And you go, what? What galaxy brain forced you to do? You have Brennan Armstrong and all these receivers who are so incredible, and you throw a lateral out wide to an offensive tackle, and he gets tackled for like a 5-yard loss, and they lose a play, and then they throw an incompletion. The game's over. And you go, how did you snatch defeat from the jaws of victory in that game? It's just what they did in 2018 in Virginia Tech. It's just what they did in 2020. Well, 2020 was not a close game. 2018 was one that like six different things had to happen in the exact order in the fourth quarter and overtime for them to lose that game. They still did it somehow. So I don't know. That's one of those things where it's like, Show me UVA that you're better than Virginia Tech. And I haven't seen it in my time that I've been here outside 1 year when Bryce Perkins really put on the Superman cape.
You and I were huge fans of David Cutcliffe and the job he did at Duke. I think Mike Elko is a great hire though, in terms of being able to replace him. Georgia Tech, I think, is sort of a lost case. I am pushing, me and Kelvin Harris, who I have on the show every now and then, have been pushing for Georgia Tech to make a run at Deion Sanders. Think that maybe saves Georgia Tech. Are they just complete non-factors this year in the race? You think in your mind, Georgia Tech and Duke just kind of like,
yeah,
bad years.
I look at Duke. Duke was horrible last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were a terrible team. That defense was atrocious. It's a good thing they hired a defensive minded coach to come in and fix that. I mean, they got destroyed by Virginia Tech, and Virginia Tech was fired its coach 2 days later. Mm-hmm. So that tells you kind of what position Duke was in last year. And the thing with Duke is, like, some teams you look at them and you go, man, I just don't know if this coach is getting the most out of this talent. You know, you think that with Manny Diaz, you think that with Justin Fuente. No, you didn't think that with David Cutcliffe. Right. That was never the case with him. You're going, man, he's probably maximizing the talent here. That's the issue, is maybe he's not bringing in the talent that he has in the past or developing it all the way to its full extent. So I think that that program's in for a big rebuild. I think it's not a 1 year type thing. I think it's going to take a couple years to kind of get momentum moving back in the right direction. Then Georgia Tech, you know, I've not been a Jeff Collins bandwagoner at all his entire time there. And I know the first year he had, you know, he's coming from a spread offense to transitioning out of that. And it's like a true year zero. You hear that a lot with coaches. For that, it was like true. Like they didn't have a tight end on the roster, but they had like 15 running backs or something like that. Like,
yeah,
that is a tough roster to turn around. But everything I've seen from what Georgia Tech has done has just not impressed me the last couple of years.
And all their best players are leaving. Jahmyr Gibbs takes off.
Jahmyr Gibbs going to Alabama. It's like, man. Okay, good luck with that. And then on top of that, I don't know what Jeff Collins did to anybody this year for this schedule. But, I mean, you open with Clemson. You close at Georgia. And, they, you know, they have those every year. So I understand that that's how that goes. But then the non-conference, they also play Ole Miss and at UCF.
Yeah, not a fun. I mean, he's gone 3-9. What? How many years in a row? Was it 2 or 3 years in a row now?
3 years in a row. I think it's every year he's gone 3-9.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. To me, listen, Georgia Tech's an important program in the ACC. They're in Atlanta. I mean, Atlanta's basically become the capital of SEC country. Doesn't Deion Sanders, hiring Deion Sanders, paying him whatever it takes to bring him in there, make Georgia Tech, you know, a factor, kind of the way Miami did with bringing Cristobal back?
Maybe. I think Cristobal has more of a, you know, he's like, that was his alma mater.
Right.
You know,
primetime lives in Atlanta. He is Atlanta.
He did. He is. But, you know, I think Florida State, that might have more effect for him there. The thing I wonder is, would that be, you know, if he's attracting these top flight recruits and stuff, is that going to work at Georgia Tech? Are they going to be able to get those guys into Georgia Tech? You know, that was sort of part of the reason with Paul Johnson is, you know, some of the academic hurdles that they had to get over in terms of getting guys in there. That's why they went with the option, is they've thought that could be a good reason or a good way to run a program with some of those limitations. So I don't know. They got to do something different. I mean, that was always Jeff Collins's thing when he came in. It's like, this is the University of Atlanta. We're going to sell the ATL and we're going to connect to these guys. And here we are 3 years in, and this just doesn't seem like there's any progress there.
There's
so,
no pull. There's no magnets.
I know, man. And that, like, I love that stadium because it's like downtown.
It is fun.
When it's too early in the year and it's nice out, when it's cold in the year and it's an outdoor press box, it's miserable. It's so terrible out there. But like, if it's early enough, you're there, you're outdoors, your eardrums are bursting from when they play All the Way Turned Up in the fourth quarter, running on like 15 straight years now of doing that. But man, the last time we were down there, it was like 40-0. Like, Virginia Tech just absolutely blew them out. It was not a great Virginia Tech team that did it either. And it was just dead. I mean, there was nobody in the crowd. And when that stadium is empty, it is just a mausoleum. It's just like a wall of empty bleachers in the south end or in the one of the end zones going up where the students normally are. I don't know, but when that place is rocking, it's really good. I'd like to see Georgia Tech get back to something like that, because I do enjoy going there when it's a lively atmosphere.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
And I know you got to go to practice here in a bit, and I don't want to hold you up too much longer. Two more questions, and then you can run out of here and get down there to practice. One of the eight, I think you said, how you have available to you this year, right? That you can go
and
watch.
That's right. In camp, we got in availability. We got availability at all eight, and we can see part of eight. So that's an improvement yes. in being able to watch practice. Not so much in the number of players we get to talk to, but you know, there's the give and take, I guess.
Realignment. You know, ACC maybe views itself as the third best conference after, you know, Pac-12 loses USC and UCLA. I'm sure, you know, you mentioned Jim Phillips already. I know Fortuna wrote about his conversations out there. Grace and I broke down the grant of rights. Andy Staples wrote about it. I mean, it seems pretty airtight. The only way I think anybody could escape at this point in the next, I don't know, 6 to 8 years from that thing is if the conference decides to open up and invite some teams. That's basically what I've been told by a couple of different lawyers that I've asked questions regarding this thing. What's sort of the mood, I guess, in the conference, in your opinion, and what do you think happens? What do you think shakes out here?
This feels like one of those family dinners where everybody is wary of the person they're sitting next to.
Right.
Like you've got like a fork underneath the table or something like that, that you're just like gripping very tightly. Like, I don't know what this guy next to me is going to do. So I'm not describing any family dinners that I have been to, by the way. That's not a commentary.
That doesn't happen at the Bitter family.
I'm just imagining some sort of family gathering out there where there's some, a little bit of wariness of everybody else at the table. I mean, yeah, everybody's going to talk about unity and preach unity, but at the same time, I guarantee you every school's lawyers have looked over this grant of rights thing to see if there's a way out of it. And I don't know that there is. Like, I'm not a legal expert, but, you know, USC or Oklahoma and Texas are going to the SEC after the grant of rights expires in the Big 12. USC and UCLA are going to the Big 10 after the grant of rights expires in the Pac-12. Nobody is challenging these things, which tells me it's probably either really difficult or more trouble than it's worth or really expensive or a combination of all those three things. And when you're talking about a couple of years, yeah, maybe you can just wait it out. But you know, the ACC's 13, 14 more years of this thing. That's a long time. So I don't know if there's a way out of it. I feel like these schools are just kind of stuck together for the time being, because I don't know what you do to add significant eyeballs and money to the conference. Like there's no... outside of Notre Dame, there's no silver bullet out there that's going to make that happen. And I don't think Notre Dame's coming. Like no, if that's what everybody's way, if I don't think they're going to the Big Ten either. I think they're going to sit there and be happy being independent. I think NBC or somebody else will pony up enough money for them to continue with their independence and get their, you know, their little unique specialness that they have to every other school in the country. And I think they like that and they'll pay for that in money. They don't care if they don't make as much money as the Big Ten schools. They're Notre Dame. They'll make it up somewhere else. But if Notre Dame's not coming, I don't know who you add that, you know, significantly alters the TV contract or adds enough money to it that all of a sudden everybody's slice of the pie is bigger than it was before. You know, people talk about Oregon and Washington. It's like, oh man, the Big Ten, they might want them. It's like, if the Big Ten wanted Oregon and Washington, they would have taken Oregon and Washington already. There's nothing stopping them from doing that right now. They've looked at the inventory. They've said, no, we're good. Mm-hmm. No, thanks. We'll pass. And I think you look at the entirety of the Big 12 and the rest of the Pac-12, and it's probably everybody has the same feeling about the rest of those teams. Like, eh, they're all right, but they're not going to be a game changer. And that's what you need right now is the ACC is a game changer. You need to do something that could completely upset the status quo. And I just don't think that option is out there. So I don't envy Jim Phillips's position. Everybody's like, oh, he's making these you know, speeches about, you know, how great student athletes are. We need to get back to that. And it sounds very old school and not cutthroat like these other schools are. I don't know what he does. And I don't know if there's an obvious answer out there, because if there was, they would have done it by now.
Agreed. I think the ACC is just kind of screwed. And that's why I said maybe 6 to 8 years from now when you know, maybe they're desperate and the gap between them and the Big Ten and SEC is much wider than it is right now when the income is very vast and they have no choice. I just think, you know, at least for the next 4 years, I can't see anything changing. And that's something I heard from a couple of different administrators is, you know, this takes time to pull off. It's not just going to happen overnight. And, they'll work with ESPN. ESPN's partners with them, right? 50-50 on this TV deal. So ESPN's going to want to make some more money as well. But, you know, maybe it's some version of the Alliance where you have some Pac-12 ACC
kickoff
games.
Don't say Alliance. Don't
use the word
Alliance.
Word.
No. You got to be like some sort of confederation or something. You can't say Alliance. You need to bury the word Alliance. If it comes up, you cannot say it if you're a commissioner of any of these conferences.
I apologize.
Because the last one was so disastrous. You're right, though. I mean, with 14 years left on this grant of rights, I don't know there's much you can do, but that bond becomes less and less by the year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 10 years from now, if you're looking at 4 years left that you have to wait to get out of it or buy out of it or however you could possibly get out of it, that's a little bit more palatable than 14 or 15. And you know, having to, you know, what's the bill right now? It's like $400 million or something like that. Is that
upwards,
the amount
upwards
of money?
$300 million.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd have to pay and what you would forfeit in addition to possibly not being on TV for a long time. I mean, that's just too much. No school could stomach that right now. But when you're 4 years from the finish line, maybe you can.
Yeah. I mean, and at that point, there's desperation because the gap will be so wide. You know, it'll just keep widening with the SEC and Big Ten. Last one, and you can go. Is the Miami-Virginia Tech rivalry dead? Is this it? You know, the sexiness of this game between these teams. I mean, I know they're going to play twice every 4 years, but the Coastal's gone. Feels like it could just become another game. You think that's the case?
Well, let's pause for a moment to look at the big loser in this whole situation. And it's me and everybody else on the Virginia Tech beat who will no longer have an every other year trip to Miami to look forward to. This is disastrous.
You,
this was my idea. And then they screwed it up by not giving Miami Virginia Tech as an annual partner. You know, I set my clock to that South Beach trip every other year, and now it's going to be every 4 years.
Like the Olympics.
Oh my gosh, this is going to be just devastating to my travel itineraries here. I don't know if it's dead. My hope is that they'll get through this first 4 years and they'll see how it works. Then they go, we've made a huge mistake in not pairing up Virginia Tech and Miami. I look at Louisville's partners. I go, those should be Virginia Techs.
Mm-hmm.
they play Georgia Tech and Virginia and Miami. I'm like, those should be Virginia Tech's partners. Like, what are you doing? And Virginia Tech has Pittsburgh, Wake Forest, and Virginia. I'm like, those should be Louisville's partner. If you swap those two, this is a very easy fix. I don't know why the conference is bending over backwards to accommodate Louisville and give them some better matchups in this whole thing when they, you know, they were the last ones in. You shouldn't be concerned about what their feelings are right now. But, you know, the thing I like about Virginia Tech Miami is it's just sort of this, you know, clash of styles and clash of cultures between the two. And it's been so even. They've played 30 straight years and the teams are 15 and 15.
Yeah.
There's some bragging rights on the line this year in the last one before they stop this annual matchup. And every year it's Miami's, you know, talent and flash against Virginia Tech's blue collarness and, you know, workmanlike team. And like, I just like that. I like that contrast of styles. And you go back and you look at the history of this program, there's been some great games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I
great
know they
finishes.
They haven't been for like the ACC title or anything like that, but I mean, they've been great matchups over the years. I think there's some dislike between the two programs. I think the players get up for this particular game and, you know, I'm going to miss it. I think it's just idiocy that the ACC didn't match these two teams up. I would have loved to have been in the room when they were discussing this because I have no idea how they came up with these matchups that they did.
I know Miami fans were disappointed. That was the one that they kept screaming about. How can we not play Virginia Tech every single year? That's our rival. How did the Hokies fans take it? I mean, would you say Miami, I mean, outside of Virginia, obviously the in-state rivalry, would you say that's the game that they get up for every year? I mean, I know there's the non-conference stuff, but is that just sort of something that, I don't know, is so vitally important to the program to play Miami every year?
Yeah, I think Miami, I think North Carolina is like that now too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think most Virginia Tech fans are realistic to know that they're not among North Carolina's top three, four, maybe even five rivals that they had to play every single year. But, you know, Virginia Tech, Miami come into the ACC at the same time. They have a Big East past going way back. They've played in so many games that the rivalry's been so close. I just don't know why you'd stop that. And like, who are Miami? Miami's playing Louisville every year. Is that right?
They've got Louisville every single year, which, you know, they weren't even in the
BC?
Big East when Miami
is BC,
was...
whatever. Is who else do they have?
BC, the two furthest opponents, right? BC and Miami in terms of
distance. I don't get it. Yeah. Like, who's sitting here going, man, got to have BC Miami? Like, what? Based on Doug Flutie? Is that all you're basing right. that on? Like, I don't get it. And Louisville, Miami's got no history.
Right.
Like, what
Miami
that?
Didn't
like,
keep anybody from the coastal. They, I mean, look, Louisville and BC are all Atlantic teams along with Florida State. So they didn't keep any of their coastal rivals.
Yeah, I don't get. I mean, Virginia Tech plays Wake Forest, and that's regional. Mm-hmm. But there's not really a history there. I mean, the history of that rivalry is the 0-0 regulation game where Frank Beamer's raising his arms up in the air as a field goal miss as they go into overtime, tied 0-0. That's the only history with Wake Forest. Like, I realize it's close, and maybe that's was the driving factor in some of the stuff was regionality and making it easier for fans to get to places. But I think you ask any Virginia Tech fan, would you rather play Wake Forest every year in Miami? They're choosing Miami. Yeah. Even if that's a bigger picture, that should be a more difficult matchup. You know, Wake Forest is the reigning Atlantic Division champion. I think Virginia Tech fans would still love to go down to Miami every other year and see the Hurricanes have to come up to Blacksburg.
Andy, we got to do this more often, especially now that Atlantic and Coastal has gone away. And, you know, I got this on YouTube, right? You made sure you looked good for today's show.
That's right.
You always look sharp.
I'll pour some out for the floor here for Atlantic and Coastal. That's got some ginger ale here that we can pour out for it.
But we got to do this more often because I think, people come to the Athletic for all of our coverage, not just our individual teams. And I think ACC, we can't ignore. It's the third best conference. That's what we got to call ourselves now.
Solid number three.
We're number three.
That should be their new calling card. ACC, we're number three. At least we're not on as loose footing as the Big 12 and Pac whatever it's going to be called.
Right. The Pac something.
Yeah.
It was fun. Get you back on again. Thank you, man.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks for having me.